Welcome to You Are Not Broken, the only podcast that combines science, medicine, and psychology to re-educate your brain and help you live your best love life. And I'm your host, board-certified female urologist, Dr. Casperson. Hey women, I'm so excited today to have Dr. Vanessa Calderon, which I'm totally killing her last name with my Minnesota accent. She's going to say it so much nicer than me. She's a life coach, a scientist, and an emergency medicine physician. She uses the perfect combination of evidence-based tools and thought work to help working women solve everyday problems. She's the wellness and resilience director for a national physician organization, and she spent over half a decade reconnecting healthcare providers to their original purpose in medicine through education and professional coaching. We're in the same life coaching school, and we certified in April of this year. It's so fun to coach with you too, Dr. Vanessa. Can you say your last name?
First of all, you totally didn't butcher it. It's Calderon, but Calderon is very close.
Oh, it's beautiful when you say it. You say it with all the vowels. I just make it all the consonants.
I even roll the R. Calderon.
Oh God. Bless you. You're very kind to me. You have a beautiful last name. So we met in life coach school, which is so cool.
That's right, girlfriend.
And we used each other as practice coaching late one
totally.
Night.
Totally. And also just like, I'm always in awe by you and other women in our coaching program who are full-time moms, spouses, physicians, and now coaches. It's just like blows my mind.
We're a bunch of high achievers.
Yeah, it's totally normal for me. There's nothing exceptional about me, but Kelly is out of the water.
We all like fangirl each other. We're like, how do you do it? And you're like, you're doing it too. I'm not any more special than you are. Well, you are joining me today, and thank you so much for doing it because you have so much training in resiliency and stress management. And I was hoping we could talk about the role of burnout and stress and its effect on sex drives and relationships.
Yes, girlfriend, let's do it. So not really surprising to me is when I first started on my journey with resiliency and stress management work, I didn't realize how intertwined all of these things are with your personal life because I was coming at it from a sort of professional angle, like how to create career longevity. But it's never one thing, right? It's like how you do one thing, it's how you do everything. So if you're super stressed out at work, it's going to come home with you. And more I coached my clients on stress management and resiliency for career, the more and more relationships came up all of the time. And the biggest thing was, you know, the kind of stress that was coming up in personal relationships at home, especially intimate relationships with spouses or partners because of sex. You know, because when you're stressed out, it's really hard to have sex.
So hard. The brain is either like having sex or in survival mode. Like that's where, I forget who said that, but it's like, you're basically either like trying to survive or you're having sex. So when you're stressed and you're just trying to survive all the time, you're really not literally in the body that can enjoy and have sex.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. So, you know, stress can do three, it'll affect your sex drive in three different ways. Number one, physiologically, and it's exactly what you said, which is kind of the fight or flight cycle, because when you're stressed out, it just turns on your evolutionary fight or flight response. And, you know, when that gets turned on and you're getting ready to like go fight off, for example, a saber-toothed tiger or your boss that's pissed off at you, your blood is going to get diverted away from all your non-essential organs, like your GI tract, so you're not going to be digesting food, but also your reproductive organs, because that's just not going to be turned on or excited whenever you're stressed out. And for us nowadays, we're not really ever getting chased by saber-toothed tigers, but we're chronically experiencing stress. I mean, think about it. From the moment you wake up, if your alarm goes off and you get up late, or you get in an argument with your spouse, or your kids are running late to school, your stress hormones are turned on all of the time. You're in a car on the way to work, you're stressed out. Someone like cuts off in front of you, you get stressed out. You get a text message from your boss, you're stressed out, which means that your circulating hormones, your stress hormones are always circulating. It's kind of like having your car on in idle mode all of the time. And when your car's on, always in idle mode, think about it, it needs to run on something. So the biggest stress hormone, which is cortisol, that's always being released. And when your car's on idle mode all of the time, it's going to run out of cortisol. So what does it do? It uses other hormones in your body to produce cortisol. And some of those hormones are your reproductive hormones. So your libido and testosterone specifically gets used to reproduce cortisol when you're really stressed out, which of course means it decreases your sex drive even more. And that's just your physiologic response, not even psychologic, you know? we know when we're really stressed out or when we're experiencing burnout, we're emotionally withdrawn, totally emotionally withdrawn, which means we come home and we're just not present. So when your partner is trying to be intimate with you, you feel emotionally exhausted. You're drained, your energy levels are low, and you're sort of in this downward spiral. And you can imagine when you're actually having sex, right?
Oh, totally. I think so many people just think that that's how, like, air quotes, life is, air quotes, right? Like, they just think, like, this is modern life. And can you talk to, like, how do you get people to even realize that there might be a different way of living, or there might be, like, a different way of reacting to modern life?
Yeah, I think a question to always ask yourself is this the way you want to live your life? Or what would be possible if this wasn't modern life? And what would modern life look like if it was also peaceful? Because I think that that's the biggest thing, because I don't believe that the purpose of life is to always be happy, but the purpose of life is to always find peace in everything you do. And if you choose to have a high stress life, there's nothing wrong with that if you always want to be on and activated. I'm an ER doc, for goodness sakes, you know? I'm at work, things are happening to me all of the time. And my stress hormones can be high, but they don't have to be. Because just because I choose to have a high stress sort of career, I also choose to manage my stress. And I think that's the big thing, that life can be stressful, but you can also choose to manage your stress so you can turn off your cortisol and show up purposefully as opposed to reactive and stressed out all the time.
Totally. I think a lot of women too, they're like, I have to be this way, or their belief that like things will just fall apart, right? If they're not like always on and always vigilant and always checking or planning, like that their life will fall apart. And it's usually not true, but I think that's a lot of belief that people have. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I had that belief. I mean, I like to call myself a recovering controller and perfectionist, you know, super type A, thinking that everything needed to be perfect all of the time. And, you know, if I wasn't doing this, and I had to control everything because I was so afraid that if I didn't, my life would fall apart. And there was a time in my life when I was so stressed out. And I actually came into the resiliency and wellness work after I experienced my own bout of burnout. I was super burnt out because I didn't know, and I didn't want to ask for help when I needed it. You know, I was too afraid to be seen as weak or too vulnerable. And so, yeah, of course, I experienced all of those things. And now on the other side, looking back, I still have a career that I love. You know, I'm a physician leader in my hospital. I could be a coach. I'm a mom, full-time mom. I have a great marriage. And I don't experience that same level of stress because I know how to catch myself. I know how to shift out of that when I'm in that space. I have some fantastic stress management techniques that really work that I use all the time.
Perfect. Can you share those with us?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of these things are like things that people know about, right? So I'm just going to say them all, and then I'm going to share with you how they work and why. So number one, meditation. Meditation, people roll their eyes at when I say it out loud because it's like, ugh, I don't want to just sit there by me. I don't have enough time to go sit quietly. That's really the one thing that I hear. And there's this really fantastic old Buddhist saying, which is a man went down to go meditate, and he told his meditation guru, I don't have 5 minutes to meditate. And his teacher said, okay, well then meditate for 1 hour.
Yeah, I love that quote.
It's so good, right? And so the thing with meditation is this, that when you learn how to sit quietly, I'm going to share some tips and tools if you're just getting started in a second, but when you learn how to sit quietly for even just like 3 minutes or 5 minutes, and you start being so present that you can separate you from your thoughts, which means you can observe your thoughts and let them go by, what ends up happening is that same heightened level of awareness that you have when you're sitting and meditating, you can transfer to the real world. So for example, when I'm in my car driving and somebody cuts me off, I feel myself get stressed out. I see my thought happen, like, and I'm able to catch it, take a deep breath, let it go, and calm myself down. So I turn off my sympathetic nervous system, you know, and you can't have both, you know, your stress system on, your sympathetic nervous system, and your relaxation response on, your parasympathetic nervous system. You can't have those both on at the same time. So when you're aware of your thoughts and you can pull yourself out of that, and I practice something called self-regulation, which I'll share in a moment, you just can't have both on at the same time. So you can turn yourself back to relaxed. And the important reason why that you want to be, and you want to always be relaxed is, whenever you're triggered or you're stressed out, you're never going to be responding with your higher order brain, with your prefrontal cortex, never. You're always instinctively reacting to things. And your outcomes in life will always be a function of whatever life throws your way, whatever circumstance throws your way, and how you choose to react to it. And when you choose to become thoughtful, that R instead of reaction becomes response. So how you thoughtfully respond to things. And that I think is the most powerful thing. And I'm not going to sit here and just share quotes, even though I'd love to, because there's so many inspirational quotes. But you know that really awesome Viktor Frankl quote that between stimulus and response, there is that space. And that's exactly what I mean. You know, life is going to throw things at you all the time, and you can choose to calm yourself down, get out of your stress response, stop being triggered, take a deep breath, come back to your higher order brain, and then thoughtfully respond to what life throws your way.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, for people to gain the power to realize that you don't just have to respond to everything, there's actually a pause that happens. And for the longest time for meditation for me, I didn't get the point of meditation. I think it was in Dan Harris's book, 10% Happier, where he really was like, the point is to be aware of the thoughts. It's not to quiet the mind. A lot of people think meditation's like to not have thoughts or to quiet it or to only have happy thoughts, but it's really to start seeing those thoughts come in and they come out. And they come in and they come out. So it's just practice. And then you're right. You can take it to the rest of your life.
Oh my God. So funny that you say that. I remember when I've been meditating maybe for 15 years now, but when I first started meditating, I always thought I was doing it wrong because I couldn't. And of course I'm like total perfectionist, right? It's like, oh, I can't shut my mind up. Oh, this sucks. I can't do it right. So what I started doing, so then I started making excuses. Oh, I don't have, you know, 10 minutes a day to sit down and meditate. And this is like way back when I was in residency. So then I told myself, okay, I'm going to commit to doing this. And so I started with just 1 minute a day because it was really hard for me to make an argument that I didn't have a minute a day. And once I got good at a minute, I went up to 3 minutes and then five. And now I sit from, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes, just depends on how much time I have. But it's really powerful. If you listeners that are out there, if you want to take this challenge, just try it. Try it for 30 days. I promise you something will shift at 30 days for you. About 3 years ago, I just challenged myself. I wanted to see if I could do it every day. And at about day 36 for me, something shifted. And now I've been doing it every day for about 2.5 years.
That's amazing. The 10% Happier book's awesome too, because it's just like an average Joe with panic attacks who like changed his life. Because of that.
So good.
So good. There's so much data too in meditation and sex and how meditation actually helps people's sex lives. Because a big problem for women with sex is their wandering minds. Women have wandering minds, right? We're multitaskers. One theory behind that is we just have more neural connections in our brain and across hemispheres. So we're just kind of always surveying the universe. And part of that surveying like the future and the past, right? And that's not where orgasms live. Orgasms literally live in the body, in the present. And that's what mindfulness does, is to notice when the mind is wandering and to bring it back. And that helps with sex because I think so many women are like, oh, my mind wandered. I can't get back into sex. And it's like, no, you can actually bring it back. You can refocus. You can stay in the intimacy when you gain that skill. It's immensely powerful for like that wandering, multitasking mind that gets distracted with sex.
Yeah, you know, that's super fascinating. I teach my clients two things, and this actually went back to sex and was really helpful for sex, even though initially I didn't intend it to be. But it's like, know what your body does when you get triggered, because before you've even have like the wherewithal that you're being triggered and you're reacting, your body's already going for it because it happens instantaneously. And so I teach my clients how to like figure out what's happening to their body when they get triggered. And so what I told them is, get in touch with your body, because your body will always tell you the truth. That's the only thing you know where you are in this moment, is to get recentered with your body. And so when my client's mind, when they were super stressed out at work and were trying to reconnect with their spouses at home and they were having sex and their mind would wander, I would say, get in touch with your body. Like, what is your body doing, feeling in this moment? You know, when their mind would wander, they'd be like, okay, I'm feeling really relaxed right now. I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that, you know? And they would say those things in their head to get back into the moment, you know, to refocus themselves back in the moment of sex, like where they are in that moment, which was just so powerful.
Awesome. Yeah. Another technique people talk about is just refocusing back on the pelvis to be like, I'm going back into my clitoris. I'm going back into my pelvis, to literally say like, mind, we're in our body right now. This is the sensation. And to pay attention to those sensations, because if we're getting touched and our minds are in different places, that's how we kind of learn to dissociate, you know, touch from intimacy and orgasm. So it's huge.
Yeah. Not surprising. That's so awesome.
Let's talk about, you know, so when people come, they're living in this stressed out world and they come home and they're kind of stressed out at home. And then they like try to get into intimacy in the bedroom. And it's like, you can't light switch this. Like you really have to calm down that body. Like you're talking about getting back into the parasympathetic calm body in order to enjoy sex and orgasm. What advice can you give people as far as like what they can do at home just to kind of get back into the non-stressed system?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first, I want to just highlight something that will always happen to you if you're not mindful. And that's this like stress, no sex cycle. You know, I call it the stress, no sex cycle. When you're super stressed out, you come home and you already have a decreased libido because you're chronically stressed out, which means that when your partner tries to initiate sex, you're going to pull away from that. And when you pull away from that, it causes a rift in your relationship, right? It triggers you or your partner and your feelings get hurt, which causes more stress in your life and in your relationship. And then again, you being stressed out causes your libido to go down, causes you to pull away from sex, causes more stress. So that's the stress, no sex cycle, which leads to all of these questions that you either end up asking you of yourself, like what's wrong with me? What happened to my sex drive? You know, why can't I get aroused anymore? Or your partner starts wondering like, does this person not love me anymore? Why aren't they present anymore? Or is our relationship doomed? Which is the big one, right? It's like, should my relationship just be over? My partner doesn't want to have sex with me anymore. It's huge because, you know, like whenever someone's trying to initiate something like that, it causes a lot of vulnerability. And so if you're pulling away from that, it can really cause a lot of stress. So a few things to do. I think number one, and the most important thing to do is to talk to your partner about it and just choose to deal with this together. You know, I'm really stressed out right now. This has nothing to do with you. And that by itself, like having that level of vulnerability to just say there's something wrong, even if it has nothing to do with your marriage or your relationship, but even just raising your hand and saying, hey, there's something going on with me. I'm really stressed out. You know, I need your support. Oh, can you imagine asking for support is so hard. And then number two, you know, you have to just accept that your sex drive is going to fluctuate in relationships. It's going to go up and down all of the time. And that doesn't mean anything's gone wrong. There's nothing wrong with you and there's nothing at all wrong with your relationship. Nothing. And then the last one, and this one really speaks to that question you asked me, and it's my favorite thing, is, you know, you want to shift to a slow sensation instead of speedy sex, because that sort of slow, intimate sensation, it stimulates your relaxation response in your body, your parasympathetic nervous system, which again is the opposite from your stress response. And you can't have both of those on at the same time. So when you turn off your stress response in those moments and you turn on your relaxation response by anything, by cuddling, by holding hands, massage, you know, all of those things causes your body to really relax. Your cortisol levels turn off and you can just sit and relax. And then your libido starts to turn on, which is just beautiful.
Totally beautiful. I think in modern kind of talking about desire, I think people just think like libido is something that is there or isn't there. And I love the way you talk of like, it might not be there because of what's going on in your life. And let's actually focus on how we can improve your life. And then the libido can sometimes just naturally come back. But if we're in this stressed life and we just think like, I just need my libido back, and you're treating it in the same way that you're kind of stressing the rest of your life, it doesn't work that way.
I was just thinking when you said that, you know, there's this thing that we've learned in life coaching, right? Which is this thought model, this like cognitive thought cycle. And if your thought is, I just need my libido back, and your feeling is stressed out, all you're going to do is like try to look for ways to get your libido back. I'm so stressed out. What you're ultimately going to create is no libido, you know, because you're just stressed out more. But if your thought is, my libido will come back when it's ready, that's it. You know, my libido will come back, period. That's it. And then you feel calm or you feel at peace because that thought generates a different feeling than, I just needed my libido back, you know, like, because I just need my libido back is coming from, there's something wrong with me.
Yep. And in a place of scarcity too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Somebody had said you can never get more of something when you treat it like it's scarce. Mm. Somebody said it better than that, but basically like if you think it's a scarce thing, it's going to be harder to even get more of it because you already think it's scarce. And like sex is actually the opposite of scarce. Like you can actually have sex like every single day. Like you don't get like 3 sex coins for the month that you like run out of. So it's so not a scarce thing, but we treat it like it is.
That's so true. Yes. That's such a beautiful thing because, you know, every time we think about abundance mentality, you always start with what you're grateful for, you know, and that's how you create more of it. And so if you're feeling like in a scarcity mentality, like you don't have enough of sex, think about what you're grateful for, you know, I'm grateful that my husband wants to be intimate. I'm grateful for our soft touches. I'm grateful for holding hands. I'm grateful for those types of things.
Totally. Oh, I love that. I think the other thing for women too is to think about how men deal with stress sometimes and stereotypically, but some people deal with stress by having sex. It's a very stress relieving thing for some people, whereas other people can't have sex because they're stressed, right? And both are okay. But if your partner treats it in a different way than you do, if one of you is relieved by sex and one of you like can't have it because they're stressed, like they're both okay ways of being, and to not judge your partner for having a different way of handling that.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, if that's what one person needs or what one person doesn't need, you need to be able to be there for your partner with what they need and show them grace, you know, grace and patience. And if your partner's really stressed out and needs to have sex to relax, you don't necessarily need the desire to have sex with them. You know, you want to be a sign of support. You love your partner. And obviously don't do things that don't make you feel good. But if you're okay with it, then that's going to be a huge sign of support for your partner.
Huge sign of support. Yeah. You know, my theory is always intimacy is created by talking about sex. Intimacy is not always created just by having sex. And it's like the conversations about something vulnerable is where the intimacy is created.
Totally.
So I always encourage people to talk about it and talk about it more than once. You don't just have one sex talk with your partner and then you're good.
Never. One is never enough. But that's why like things always feel so good after you talk about them. Or like if you start therapy sessions and you're like at a medium place in your relationship, not low, not too low, but in a medium place, you always elevate your relationship, right? Because you just get intimate.
Totally. And you learn so much more about your partner. You're like, I had no idea you wanted sex because it relieves stress for you.
Yeah.
Right. Or I had no idea you needed like a half an hour of like a bath and a massage to get into it because it helps you get rid of the stress first.
Yeah.
Right. And just learning how people deal with their stress responses can build intimacy.
Absolutely.
Oh, I love it. So in our coaching school, we kind of learned like you were talking about earlier, like how our thoughts create our feelings. And I think that desire is a fascinating thing to talk about because desire can really fit anywhere in the model, depending upon how you talk about it, right? Like, is it a thing? Is it a thought? Is it a feeling? Do you want to play with desire for a minute?
Let's do it, girlfriend.
Awesome. So I think so many people like in that women that I come in contact with, they think desire is like an object, like it's lost. Right. And so it's like this little noun that they have to go get. And what I always like to talk about is how desire is really, it's a thought that you can create, or it's a feeling that you can create based upon a thought. And if you're always thinking like maybe a low body image sort of thing, like I'm not desirable, but I want a libido. Right. And like thing we're be kind of behaving in different ways than how we actually want our life to be and how we think about things. I don't know, maybe you can say that more eloquently than me.
No, that makes a lot of sense. That's so interesting that you said some people think about it as a noun, but totally, right? It's like, I need desire. Is it person, place, or thing? And when I think about desire, I think about it as a feeling. And so when I want to create it, the only way I can ever create a feeling is with my thoughts. And so I think about, what do I want to think to create desire, to create the feeling of desire, you know? And so I come up with a bunch of thoughts to support that. And if you wanted to work backwards and think about what actions would support you in having desire, you know, is it like putting on sexy lingerie? Is it taking a bath, a warm bath? Is it a massage? You know, would those things support you in having that feeling of desire? Or again, the result, I guess, now the result is desire. Have you walked through like the CTFAR on this podcast? People know what we're talking about?
Not all, no, not a lot. Yeah. So for people who aren't familiar with kind of the life coach school way of thinking, we think about there being like facts in the world, and that's our circumstance, right? And so I always put sex as a circumstance because sex can be actually a very neutral thing. We don't think sex is neutral, but it's actually just kind of a neutral thing that like people do. And then it's our thoughts about sex that then create the feelings, which then create our actions and results. So if we're having negative thoughts or scarcity thoughts or stressed out thoughts, we're never going to create that abundance, that kind of excitement, that positive desire that we want about that seemingly neutral noun called sex. How'd I do? Was that a good summary?
That was perfect.
That was the model 101 for everybody. Podcast number like, you know, multi-dozens at this point, and we finally get around to that.
Yeah. So I like to think about the model as kind of like a cognitive thought cycle, because that's exactly what it is. You're in a thought cycle. And so depending on what you want to create in your life, because again, every result ever created in the world has come from a thought first. And this, the thought will always create a feeling. And from your feelings, that's what drives everything you do in the world, every action. So if you're feeling desire, for example, like sex is the circumstance. Your thought is, my partner is handsome, my partner is sexy, my partner, whatever. And then you're feeling desire. What are the actions that that would cause you to do? I put on sexy lingerie. I give him a kiss on the cheek. You know, I give him a massage, whatever those things are, which creates then your result, you know, which is more desire in your relationship.
I love that model. So many people want desire, but then have negative thoughts. Right? Okay. So the thought that orgasms are hard does not create desire.
It probably doesn't create orgasms.
It also doesn't create orgasms. You can never get more of what you think is already scarce.
Yeah.
Difficult. Instead of saying, my body is perfectly built to experience orgasms, which it is. It's a fact. We have clitorises.
Yeah. So let's go back to orgasms are hard, because that is not a fact. It's just not a fact. And I just want to put it out there for the world that that's not a fact. That is a thought error. You know, thought errors are things that we've decided to be true in our lives. No one's ever questioned them, but that's a thought error. And the more you say it to yourself, it's a limiting belief. It's going to make it harder and harder for you to have an orgasm. If you've already decided, you know, orgasms are hard, it means you're going to create a feeling of stubbornness or whatever your feeling is going to be. And you're just going to keep finding proof that orgasms are hard. But if you changed your thought and your thought was, I'm perfectly built for an orgasm, the human body, that's what women are built for, you know? If that was your thought, can you imagine your feeling would be excited? And then all the actions you would create would be, it would just make it easier and easier for you to have an orgasm.
Isn't it awesome?
Yeah. I mean, that's what's so beautiful about life, period, is that you can create whatever life you want by just, you know, creating the right thoughts to support that. And if it's about your sex life or, you know, your relationships and you don't want to have a stressed out relationship, you create a thought to support that, as opposed to like, my partner's stressed out, he doesn't love me right now, or I can't give him what he wants, is my partner's stressed out, you know, what can I do to be in support?
Totally. I love it. Let's talk about the journey. Let's talk about maybe somebody's mediocre sex life and they want more desire or a better sex life in their alone or with a partner or whatever. Let's talk about the goals. Because I think a lot of people think like, once I have a better sex life, I'll be happy. Or once I, you know, learn how to have orgasms, then I'll be happy. Like they think the destination is the goal instead of the wonderful journey to get there.
Yeah, that's like the story of my life. It's like, I always used to think that I could never have fun on the journey. I had to just get where I was going. And if I was never there, you know, I could never get there. But I love this idea of, you know, what we've learned as what is called the future self. So it's always really beautiful. And I think really powerful to create this idea of what your ideal future self would be. And right now we're talking about sex specifically, but if your future self is to have like a really robust sexual life, either by yourself or with a partner, that's your future self, you know? And your future self, you'd create, again, a cognitive thought model where the result would be robust sex life. And then you work backwards. What are the actions I'd have to take to get there? What feeling would I need? And maybe the feeling is desire, but maybe it's something else. And then what thought would support that? And maybe the thought is basic, like I have a robust sex life, period, you know, or I can create whatever sex life I want. Maybe that's a thought, and your circumstance is just sex. So if that's your future self and that's the model and the feeling that is driving all of those results is desire, then come to your moment now, come to today, right now, and create that feeling now. So how do you create desire now? Again, your thoughts, right? Your thoughts create your feelings. So think about all of the thoughts that would support you in creating desire. And then when you start thinking about, and right now, for those out there that want to create desire, stop this podcast right now and write out all of those thoughts that would support you in creating desire. Write them all out. Because those are the thoughts you get to come back to whenever you're feeling like, ugh, where'd my libido go? I don't have desire. I don't have this. Or go back to those thoughts. Because those thoughts are going to support you in creating the life you want right now. You don't have to wait till you have what you think is the best sex life in the world. You can have the best sex life in the world right now.
And it's really enjoying the journey, right? So if you're like, okay, where I am now, I'm not happy. I'm not having, pleasurable sex. I'm not having the orgasms I want. I'm not desiring intimacy with. So let's say you're in that spot and your goal is to be the person who's confident. She knows she can have orgasms whenever she wants them. She enjoys sex as much as her partner, wherever you're going to be. It's like, realize the journey is where the fun is. Right? Because you're like, I'm going to have to do things in a different way to get there. I can't just snap my fingers to get there. Right? I'm going to have to learn all these different things, and realizing that like the obstacles are actually the way. Mm. Yeah. And just like, well, I don't know different ways to have sex. I don't know different ways to touch myself. I don't know how to talk to my partner. I'm going to have to figure that out. Right? So it's like all of those obstacles are actually you becoming that better version of you, or becoming the person who has already accomplished that goal. It's such a cool way of thinking about goals.
Ah, I love that so much. And the only thing I'd add to that is do it in a way that's fun. Do it in a way that's fun. When you think of like, I have to come up with new ways to have sex, it's like, how many different fun ways can I come up with to have sex? Like, because again, that fun, joyful energy is rejuvenating, and that is like never ending. You'll never run out of that energy if you're coming from fun and joy. But if you're trying to come from this, again, mentality of scarcity, it's like, this is like so horrible. I can't wait till I get there. That's going to be so much more fun when I get there. And you're just determined. I'm going to get there. That is exhausting. You can run out of that.
That's the stress cycle again.
That's the stress cycle. Exactly. That's the stress cycle, which will put you in the stress, no sex cycle.
Totally. Oh, I love it. Any other things you want to tell our listeners about resiliency and stress management and kind of all the work that you've done?
The only thing I'd say is, you living a peaceful life is available to you right now. You don't have to wait for anything. You don't have to have meditated for years and years and years to have done it. You just have to choose that that's what you want. You just have to choose right now that I'm no longer going to live a stressed out life. Because think about who you are when you're stressed. Are you the calmest person with your children, with your spouse? Who are you when you're stressed out? How do you respond in times of crisis when you're stressed out, or when something triggers you at home? Your kids don't want to eat their dinner. How do you respond when you're stressed, or when your husband decides to pull away from you and maybe he's not in the mood for something? How do you respond to those types of things? And if that's not who you want to be, then choose right now to not be that person. And there's a ton of, you can go to my website and find a bunch of stress management techniques on my website. But the point is, you don't have to be that person. You can choose right now to be at peace.
I love it. What the most important thing about all of this work is giving women their power back. To be like, you don't have to change who you are. You get to be the best version of yourself because you actively get to choose that. It's the coolest thing ever.
100% agree.
I love it. Can you tell us where we can find you again?
Yeah. Go to my website, Vanessa Calderon. MD.com. It's just Vanessa, V-A-N-E-S-S-A, Calderon, C-A-L-D-E-R-O-N, MD.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Yeah, absolutely. So much fun.